Natural Solutions with Dr. J, your source for time-tested and cutting-edge natural medicine approaches to optimize your health, with your host, Dr. J. Sordian.
A big push initially. A bunch of people say, oh, we should put a juice bar, a cafe, and I manage clubs.
Right.
They're a nightmare.
Yeah.
It's like, this has to be what you do, right? Because it's about managing food. I'm not a food manager.
So that's really interesting. So you start out managing.
I started the fitness industry in 1980.
Wow. Yeah. Doing what?
I was in college, personal training.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh, where was that?
Again, for Club One.
Uh-huh.
So.
So you were in college, but it wasn't the college.
No, I started working for a sports club in Pleasanton.
Oh, okay.
And I was going to school at Cal State Hayward, so I'd drive over the hill.
Oh, okay.
I'd open clubs for them.
Wow.
And then, take off like 10, 11, do classes in the afternoon, evening, and ran track and field.
Oh.
Yeah. Cal
State
Hayward.
That explains a lot. Oh, interesting. And you were like pretty good in the state and stuff like that?
I was a decathlete.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I went on to play another sport called team handball. I played
team handball.
Yeah, it's a European sport.
How many people play?
Six people in a court and a goalie, so it's like water polo on land.
Really?
Yeah.
And what kind of court is that?
Together?
Yeah.
Four dogs.
Four, okay. Four. Let's see if that's four. Might be more. Might be less. Oh, thanks.
It's a hardwood court.
Thank you. Hardwood court.
Yeah.
But it's a special court.
No, like a basketball court.
Oh.
It's just marked differently.
Uh-huh. Interesting. So you did that.
Yeah, I played for the U.S. junior national team, played overseas for many years, and then came back to get my degree in clinical exercise physiology.
And they have that specialty there?
At Cal State Hayward.
Cal State Hayward.
There. Ah. So after getting that...
How could you have done all that and you only look like you're 30?
52.
Like, wait a second, there's like a disconnect here.
So I started working for them again in like 89, and then finished my college degree. I got hired by the Y, and I gave my notice to Club One, and they go, wait, what do you mean you're leaving?
Because now you'd open a number of their facilities,
no,
or you
right
just were
that,
operating
I did.
One?
I know I was just like morning shift manager.
I see.
And I said, well, I have a job as a manager at,
right,
the
Y exactly,
in Oakland.
Yeah.
I live in Berkeley, so it's like I just got rid of a commute and I'm a manager.
Right.
And so they said, hold on. And a week later, they said, what do you want to do for us? And I'm like, well, I want to manage your brand new club in Oakland.
Uh-huh. Yeah, absolutely.
And while you're at it in the preparation, it's like, let's... I sat down and outlined things that I wanted to do, and I said, let's, use a trial run with your Fremont Club, which is going to open in like 8 weeks. So went in, let me hire, let me train. Yeah.
Wow, fantastic.
Let me set up, evaluation programs, all that. And then, I got to open the open one from scratch.
Uh-huh. Just keep moving. I don't even know which end has the microphone on this. Maybe this end.
Probably.
So you opened the Fremont one. It was new back, that was when?
1990, and then 91 I opened the one in Oakland. And then I managed
which
there.
Is around, it's on Grand here?
That is on 12th and Clay.
Okay, all right.
And then a lot of things changed in the fitness industry in like the late 90s, came a lot more corporate. Sort of the old 24-hour fitness, sweeping the nation, Bally sweeping the nation, all that. And they kind of redefined how they wanted to handle fitness. So started doing a lot of negotiating with them in terms of how.
So that was at like a different corporate level and stuff? Like the management changed in those things? Or
oh, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, like people that they were bringing in, how they were viewing their staff and their trainers and all that. And, basically, they weren't looking for quality. They were looking for this bargain
cheapest,
basement
kind
of thing that was going to make their insurers happy.
Right. Oh.
Yeah.
They're insurers.
Meaning the lawyer's insurance said you have to have someone on the floor all the time. They have to be managing in this certain way.
Oh,
and it wasn't about the client
for
anymore.
Liability issues.
Yeah. Oh. And it was less about the client in terms of, the quality that I was. The fact that I had a degree, the fact that I had multiple certifications, the fact that I had a decade of experience. That wasn't of interest to them. And so I left there and came here, and I had...
And this facility is called what?
The Working Body.
The Working Body. And this was already existing?
No.
Oh.
This was, I approached my current business partner, who's a Pilates instructor, and said, let's pair this and do a training studio.
Uh-huh.
And through some discussion, we included a chiropractor as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then the three of us opened up this place in 2000.
All right. So it's 2014 now, and so it's been 14 years.
So, yeah, well... Basically, in June, we agreed, and it's like a whole year to open a facility.
Yeah, right? Sure.
So we parted ways with the chiropractor in the fall. She had an injury that didn't allow her to do chiropractic anymore, so she couldn't work anymore.
Yeah.
She broke her tailbone. And she was late 50s. She wasn't into doing another startup endeavor.
Mm-hmm.
So we solved that, and then basically last January, we engaged in a lease and took over the space down the street, and we're expanding into yoga classes and Pilates classes, other forms of fitness like gyrotonic and kettlebell classes. And
I see. And those are different people, or that's same staff? Or?
There is a little bit of crossover out of our space, but when we open in about 6 or 8 weeks, we'll probably have 15 new people starting up with us initially.
What?
Yeah.
Okay.
With our current 25, so I mean, expanding to 40 independent contractors.
Wow. Incredible.
Yeah. Actually, maybe even more than that. I'm not counting the physical therapists. I'm not counting the acupuncturists. So maybe 20 people will start up with being brand new. Yeah. So we double our treatment rooms. We double the area in which everybody gets to work in, so it's more spacious. We have dedicated areas for movement now, dedicated areas for some of their warm-up things that we like people to do before they start, and two classrooms. And then ultimately the goal is after we...
So there's two floors?
Yeah, there's two mezzanines.
Oh, two mezzanines.
An 800-square-foot classroom and a 650-square-foot classroom and locker rooms upstairs.
So you built that out, you designed the
facility? We designed it, it's in the middle of being built out. Yeah, we're waiting for some lighting. When that happens, the tiling and flooring goes in, and we're getting close.
Wow. Congratulations. That's huge.
It is. It's a big undertaking.
Yeah.
Even more so than this. It's like the same timeline, but it's just, decisions times 10. Yeah.
Amazing.
And so... You were actually wanting to talk to me a little bit about also the neurology of
Absolutely.
This as well.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so I'm working on a book called Super Brain, Maximize Your Brain Health for a Better Life. And so my focus is in different arenas. It's both for people like yourself who are expert in a lot of arenas. It's like if you're working with pediatrics, I don't know if you are, it's more like elite athletes and that type of thing. Would you say you're dealing more with adults, or there's also... Prenatal. I mean, you have children yourself, so there's some
not so much
area in that, right?
Prenatal in the work that we're doing. We get more high school athletes that are wanting to do things, and sort of a gap. We're not having a lot of like 22 to 30 year olds. It's more the 35 to 60 year olds.
Oh, interesting.
We have.
Interesting. Yeah.
Well, they're so involved in their master's program or their school or all of that kind of stuff.
So that 20 range is...
It's like when you kind of settle yourself into a career, then you're looking, it's like, okay, it's busy, I need somebody to give me guidance, direction, how do I fit and make all this happen, kind of stuff. How do I knock off that, 15 pounds I put on in grad school?
Right.
Because I was a sloth and just read books.
Yeah. Interesting. So the focus is on the brain and neurology and how we can best support it. It's like, as you know, Alzheimer's is like... 1 out of 8 people in the U.S. has Alzheimer's, is the 6th leading cause of death, and 1 in 3 people dies with dementia. So part of my focus is trying to help people understand the different ways that what they can do to try to prevent that. And also, like in my practice, there are various symptom surveys and other kinds of evaluations that I do.
Uh-huh.
to help monitor what's going on, and so as we're treating, seeing if things are changing, but also getting a baseline. So in, so for example, in the work that you do here, when a person first comes in, there's some kind of evaluation that goes on that you do, and is there a neurological component with that?
Yes, there's definitely a neurological component of it, and I can speak more from myself and a group of people who are doing something called Z-Health.
Z-Health?
I don't know. Facility.
Okay, yeah, I do.
Z-Health should be something you should be looking into if you're looking for brain health. It's that's like what they're all about. But as an intake for mine, I work with Standard Process Products. And you come in and you have a system survey.
Right.
I have a 7-page questionnaire.
So there's the symptom survey to the Standard Process.
Yes.
And then you have a separate questionnaire.
Yeah, 7-page questionnaire where you go through. It's very directed where I have, you know, do you have constipation? Do you not?
Right.
In the past? And, you know, what kind of diseases you've had in the past? Mumps, measles, rubella, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's all meant for you to check off boxes.
Yeah. And so it's a health history type thing. Versus,
health history that's very directed, that causes and prompts me then to ask more questions.
Exactly.
Or to go to another survey.
Yeah.
So if one of the things you're experiencing is memory things, then I'm going to go to a neurotransmitter survey with you, and I'm going to go to a brain health survey with you.
Right. So you have like a 7-page survey that then breaks out, and you can figure out which others may have to
categorize. Right, I don't want to give you like 300 pages
Exactly. That makes sense.
Nothing that has any relevance to you. So it's meant as that initial intake that when we sit down and start having a conversation, I can make choices if I want to do an HRV with you, or if I want to do a bioimpedance with you, if I want to do something that has to do with a cerebellum, you know, balance reflex test with you. How's your VORC lock? You know, putting things in. You know, things that could trigger me. I get carsick. Carsick is a Cicade's problem. So it's a vision thing that goes this. And it's like, okay, I have drills for that to resolve that. And I have evaluations for them, too. So it's set up to drive you into certain other tests that we're going to do.
Okay, that sounds great. And that's pretty unique, wouldn't you say? I mean, like, medical doctors are not doing anything even close to this.
No.
Which is like, what the hell's wrong with the medical system that this isn't going on? In
they
my
don't
mind.
Even touch you.
I know.
It's like, you know, I refer to an orthopedic surgeon who actually touches you. Right? He actually, like, muscle tests you. It's like my arm hurts. It was like, push up, push into me. Does it hurt when I do that? No. I can't tell you how many... You don't.
They do an
MRI, they do an x-ray, they go, it's torn there, you're off to surgery. And it's like...
Exactly, it's crazy. I know as I do work comp injuries and stuff like that with using acupuncture and all. And, you know, we send it out and I ask patients, well, what did you do with the... You know, they'll wait for 5 hours, and then maybe it's a 3-minute thing, and it's like, what did they... Did they test this? No. Did they do range of motion? No. Did they... Okay, well, that's...
Did anybody even, like, make an evaluation of your pain level?
I know, exactly, with surveys or something. That's right, yeah.
It's a 4, okay?
Yeah.
When you come in for your follow-up, what is it? Right. It's a 2. Oh, 50% improvement with no week. It's like, you know, they don't even, like, you know, play off that.
It's I know. It's crazy. Yeah. So you do a very in-depth... evaluation. So you start out with the overview, and then depending on that, your own evaluation, it's not just what the patient or the client says.
Yes.
You also are observing because you know what's going on.
They're not putting things together.
No.
You know, they're not putting together the wide stance that they're standing where with me that's like twice the length of their shoulders. You have a balance problem.
Exactly.
You know, that's my initial cue.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, okay, you want to come in and do some strength training, and you can't do what's called cross crawl.
Oh.
Opposite arm, opposite leg, you're doing homolateral, that's a brain problem.
Yep, coordination.
So it's a brain integration problem. So, like, you know, what can we do to get your brain more integrated? And we do visual, vestibular, and joint mobility work.
Oh, all right. Yeah. So besides just the degree in physiology, it was exercise physiology?
Exercise physiology, yeah.
Did you learn all that there?
No. That's the platform. I basically view college as a platform to get to do all the rest of this.
Right.
Yeah.
So you've done lots of study elsewhere as far as neurological exam and stuff. Was that actually part of your college training?
Not even any part of my college training. My college training required me to memorize pathways and to memorize muscles, joints, and little protuberances on the body. Which is great because you are left with this foundation that, like, when I go read things down... Yeah. You know, I have a math background behind that, too. I was a math major to begin with, and I transferred into the clinical X. I went to my counselors and said, yeah, I have an aptitude for math, physics, and all this, but I don't want to go sit in a room and do something.
Calculation. Yeah.
Yeah, calculating somebody's vector analysis for this. What can I do where I can apply that? And they said things like biomechanics, that kind of stuff. So they said, go look in your physical department with all your physical background. You'd probably like this. Uh-huh. So I did an emphasis in cardiac rehab. I did an emphasis in athletic training.
All right.
So all right. It has a very specific...
Because as an athlete also, that suited you personally.
It suited me personally. I've made basically three choices in my career. One was when Title IX went into effect, I started training females.
Okay. All right. That makes sense.
A market that's not served.
Exactly.
Right. And so I said, okay, I'm going to serve this market. I went and started working for UC Berkeley as a strength and conditioning coach for their tennis team. I went and coached women's track teams exclusively. I did all technical events for them, not sprinting. There was a bunch of guys doing distance running. There's a bunch of guys doing sprinting. I did shot, hurdles, pole vault.
Everything that wasn't those.
There was all pole vault was just being introduced.
That was at UC Berkeley?
No, I did that at Alkalani's, and then later I did that at St. Mary's High School in Berkeley.
Oh, wow.
I started coaching girls basketball. Mm-hmm. I did that for about a decade.
No, these were like paid, when you get paid for coaching, it's like $10 an hour or something.
That would be generous.
That would be generous. Exactly.
Yeah, I got paid $900 one year.
Right.
And that was for 11 months of work, 6 days a week, 3 hours a day. No, it was completely that, I participated in those programs, giving back to the community, all of that. But it also gave me a great opportunity to hone all these skills.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 100 girls in the track
life.
Team, 40 girls in the basketball team. Let's do dynamic warm-ups and let's see what impact that has on our coordination, your fitness level, all that kind of stuff. Mm. Let's apply minimum standards. It's like minimum standards is if you guys can run a 6-minute mile, I will not make you do forced running. Show me a proficient minimum level of fitness in this one area, and we'll go on and do something that's more specific.
Interesting. So you've written on this? You have textbooks on it or training programs or anything?
Yeah. I don't have any training programs with regards to that other than like what we've developed here
exactly.
And spread into there.
Yeah.
But these things are accepted in international sport. So there was a whole study done by Australian Sport where they, they set a grad student up in the stands and they said mark down, stop and start. The average stop and start for a basketball player is about 25 to 30 seconds.
Mm.
So then they said you should be developing training programs that are start and stop in nature that are 25 to 30 seconds in length because that's what they did. Somebody did that for tennis too.
Ah, interesting.
And the average tenor who plays something called 8-ball is a 2-hour game. The average somebody who plays a 4-ball, which is a much more power game, is an hour and 35 minutes. And so you train them for the appropriateness of what they do.
Interesting.
And what I marketed myself is I trained as strength and conditioning specific to your sport and a movement specialist.
Mm.
So I don't know tennis, but I know movement.
Yeah.
And I can make you guys more efficient in your move. That's a false step. If you get rid of that step, you've gotten rid of one step in your movement, your tennis. You'll get to the ball quicker. So I went in and that's how I marketed a lot of stuff. Where we're marketing ourselves
and you
now,
watch it or you like videotape and then you can point that out to people too?
Both. Yeah. I go, Saturday, all the girls are playing. Watch. Okay. She's got a false step every time she goes to her backhand. Good. Okay. This girl's 2 minutes, two hours into her match and she's falling apart. She needs more cardiorespiratory fitness.
Mm-hmm.
This girl's like still crushing it. She's actually, the other girl on the other side fell down because of heat exhaustion. She doesn't need any more cardiorespiratory fitness. But then you would see in training what this one girl could do and what this one girl couldn't do. And then so you started developing standards for the team that if you could do this, then I know you could do that.
Right.
And then I would go to games and I'd be sitting up in the stands. I said, this is not a fit team. You're about to play an unfit team. You need to hammer them early and they'll fall apart.
Right. Oh, yeah. Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was my contribution.
Because you have this incredible ability to analyze things and distill it. At least that's what I've observed from, it's one of your superpowers, let's say.
I would agree. It's in here, I have 30 trainers right now. They want me to teach follow-up 10 days after because they want the Cliff Note version, right? Because I'm going to go in and it's like, okay, here's what I saw that was important this weekend that you can translate into your training right now. All the other stuff is interesting. You guys should read it and learn it.
Mm-hmm.
But you can do this tomorrow with your client and have profound impact and your client will go, wow.
Wow. And that's because you have all this background in training yourself, training people so you can help to train other people who are less experienced.
Yes, so and it's like, you know, 35 years, you know, multiple teams. I get, you know, 100 kids in track and field and 40 kids in basketball every year. Yeah. I mean, that's thousands of kids who run through. You develop an ear as well for movement. Mm-hmm. It's like you turn around, that's not right. How did you know it wasn't right? It's like it doesn't have the right cadence, you know, when somebody's working on a box with me or something.
Oh, interesting.
You
interesting.
Know, where you go get their next drill. So to get back to the whole fitness neurology end of it.
Yeah.
There's a book called Spark. Are you aware of that?
Spark?
Yes. No. Must buy.
Okay.
Must buy if you're going to talk about this whole fitness brain. So Spark basically is a PE teacher in the Midwest is given heart rate monitors at a national conference that he went to. So he comes back and, you know, being in the middle of nowhere, he's like, okay, what am I going to do with these in my classes? And looks through his notes and basically throws them on a bunch of his PE students and says, do what we're doing and let me see what's going on. And he basically saw that what he perceived as the kids who were working the hardest, i.e. all the good athletes running fast, were actually working very low in their heart rates. And all the kids who were struggling in the back of the class were working very high in their heart rate.
So their heart rate was high?
Yes.
It was rapid?
It was rapid, but like how hard they were working was they were working the hardest. It's like they weren't running the fastest, but they were working the hardest. So he sat down and he goes, well, what if I graded all my class on effort? So that was his first big aha.
This is it.
Yeah. So he goes, I'm going to put everybody in a heart rate monitor and everybody has to work in their zone. If you're not working in your zone, you get a bad grade. So all the star athletes started getting D's and C's. And, you know, the athletic director goes crazy. He goes, no, look at the science. This is what I'm doing. And this is what I'm rating. It's like, are you working hard in class? Just like you'll give some kid a little bit better grade, like a C plus when they're a C student because of their effort.
Exactly.
They're doing extra credit. They're staying after work. Right. So they get a little bit of bump because you can really see they're trying. And so he started basing all his classes off that. And then when people realized that this was really the way it was going to fly, they started running within their zones. When he slowed the kids down and sped the kids up, they actually saw their performance improve. So then it had relativity to them.
Interesting.
The interesting thing that he found out of all of it, that when he did this, all the grades improved in the classes immediately following his PE classes. So they started moving his class around, and they found that to be true. They found that wherever they put his class, the class immediately following grades improved by like one whole grade. If you were getting a C, you got a B.
So I don't quite get that. So
blood flow to the brain.
Right. No, but I mean the So
if you have PE at 10,
PE, and then
the 11 o'clock class, all those kids went to 11 o'clock class, and their grades improved.
Yeah.
And they moved him to 1 o'clock, and the 2 o'clock class, the grades
improved. Got it. Okay, all right.
And
I wasn't sure which classes were moving.
Right. Now, his PE class is no longer at 10, and the 11 o'clock grades dropped.
Fascinating. Wow.
So,
and how old is this book?
At least a decade. I heard him speak in San Francisco 2 years ago. He's on a big campaign for middle schools and movement and getting movement back in and trying to get it to people to realize that it translates into better grades.
Absolutely. Makes sense. Fantastic.
To buy your copy of Superbrain, maximize your brain health for a better life, go to superbrain-thebook.com. That's superbrain-thebook.com. Information can also be found on naturalsolutionswithdrj.com.